There. Welcome, everyone, to the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School monthly members call for the month of April. The astrological, astronomical, and other happenings, cosmological, that are going on for the month of April. And we'll also talk a little bit about the last week of May. Today is March 26, 2018, and I am Eric Roth. I'm here with Daniel Giammario, the founder of the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School and the Paradigm. So we are really excited about moving into April and looking at all of the amazing things that are going on this month. But if Daniel, we can just share just a couple of announcements here, or just to remind people of what's happening in the school. Would you like to start that?
Oh, well, I was going to mention, then we can both comment about it, of course, about the beginning of our fourth online class. You know, after having done the script and archetype and the timeline and the sacred marriage relationship classes, on April 8th, we begin the synodic cycle class, specializing in Mercury, Venus, and Mars, and how those cycles relate to the paradigm. There's still time to sign up for that class. We take over 6 months to go through it, so you can. It's sort of like stretching it to 6 months over what I used to teach in 5 days and four nights. You know, that was. I think it's a little easier for people to process all the information this way.
Yeah, that's why they call that an intensive.
Indeed. And then also on April 29th, we'll be beginning a new feature in the school, which are on a quarterly basis having a free seminar class chance, basically mainly featuring me and then also members of the different quadrants. So coming up April 29th will be this free seminar about the Earth quadrant. And then 3 months later, we'll do it a different element, and featuring the outreach programs of the four elements and the four quadrants, and then being able to ask whatever questions of me or the other members of the committees. So that's going to be a new thing we start here shortly.
Yes, we'll be posting something on our shamanicastrology.com as well as the members' website. It'll be, Daniel, you're going to be writing something up for the newsletter coming up. So we'll definitely be making that more formal announcement. And we have, just in 5 days, we have a new teleclass, and that will be featuring Chiron moving into Aries, which is also a feature of tonight, for a few minutes anyway, mentioning Chiron's movement into Aries. So it's been several years that it's been Chiron's been in Pisces. So we're going to be talking all about that coming up here. It'll be Daniel and Kaylin in that teleclass. And Daniel, you're going to be doing an event in Bali.
Yes.
Is it the script and archetypes?
Yeah, it's the first class. I mean, I've done several courses in Bali before that, but they interestingly the two that I've done before have been the sacred marriage and relationship one, and also timeline. But I've never done the starting out one. So it's in the old format. Actually, 6 days, five nights. From May 10th to May 16th in person there in Bali.
Beautiful. All right. And I think I don't think we have anything else coming up real quickly here, but I know that next year we've been planning some events for next year, and there'll be more information about those events coming up in the next month or two as everything gets kind of formalized. So, I think we can. I think we could just move ahead into the month of April here.
Okay. I always like when I have an opportunity to be on these calls. I always like to begin by first looking at what's happening with the visible planets. And so, we can start with Mercury. These days right now are the time when Mercury is disappearing from the evening sky. Some of you have had an opportunity to see the rather spectacular gathering of Mercury and Venus in the evening sky. That combination like that is something that only happens about every 40 years. Some writers have referred to that as a Shekinah, Mercury-Venus grouping for so long. It's also connected in with the Venus cycle about Mercury showing up just as Venus rises from the underworld. But Mercury now, having just recently turned retrograde, is now disappearing from the evening sky and going into what we call the interior underworld and in retrograde. And then will rise as a morning star, but for all of us, all of you in the Northern Hemisphere, it's a rather unimpressive apparition of Mercury in the morning sky. Even though it's going to have a very long elongation, the angle of the inclination of the orbit is such in the Northern Hemisphere that it'll be really, really hard to have much of a visible experience of Mercury later in April. So in these first few weeks coming up, Mercury disappears and will be too close to the sun to be seen. Meanwhile, though, in the morning sky, there's a great deal of spectacular activity, as there has been now for quite some time. Back to Venus. It's only slowly rising in the evening sky, but you can't miss her now. And during the month, she'll be at a -3.9 magnitude. But anyway, now let's go to the morning sky. And Jupiter is up there, dominating. Comes up about 3 hours after sunset, -2.5. But then the gathering, probably the most spectacular visible thing going on in the coming up in the next few weeks is Mars and Saturn forming an extremely close conjunction, which occurs in the time frame of April 1, 2, and 3. We'll be talking more about this conjunction of Saturn and Mars as we go through the call today. So that's what's happening with the visibility. So Mars and Saturn. Maybe I'll just mention here also, although we'll come back to this when we have a further talk about Mars coming up. And that is that Mars literally doubles its brightness over this next month. I mean, it's just reached the point where you can tell it's slightly brighter than Saturn. But by the end of April, it doubles to -0.4. This is because, of course, Mars is getting closer and closer and closer to the Earth in this time frame that I guess you could say it's going to get bright in April, but geez, we ain't seen nothing yet. I mean, by the time we get to June and July, it will actually get to be brighter than Jupiter. Okay, so that's a little bit about the visibility factor of the planets. But I'll just spend a few minutes now giving you a little bit of an overview of the movement of the planets through the next month and plus 4 or 5 days, you know, these last few days of March. So Mercury, because in what happens with Mercury in April is that it reaches stationary direct. So this entire upcoming time period, up until May 1st, Mercury is just hanging out in Aries. I mean, right now it's at 15, almost 16 Aries. And by the time we get to May 1st, it's like 14 Aries. So that's because of it being in its retrograde loop right now. Venus moves from 24 Aries, where it is today, all the way to 7 Gemini by May 1st. Mars today is at around 5 Capricorn, And by May 1st, it will be at 23 Capricorn. So that's what kind of its usual motion, although it's starting to slow down now. Jupiter, which is retrograde at 22 Scorpio, by the time we get to May 1st, will be at 19 Scorpio. So one, you'll be able to see in the sky how Jupiter is slowly, slowly moving back toward the scales that it went through some months ago. So it's kind of backing up to go through the scales again and then to go forward again. And that'll be an interesting thing to speculate about, to get your own guidance about what would it mean for this particular Jupiter and Scorpio position to go through twice the scales, moving through the scales, going back behind the scales, and then through the scales yet again. Saturn goes stationary retrograde in April, so it's barely moving at all. Today, as we speak, it's at 8:44 Capricorn. By May 1st, it's 9 Capricorn. Uranus currently is moving pretty quickly for it, from 27 Aries now up to 29 Aries. And then, of course, next month we'll have a chance to talk about the imminent movement, a really major planetary ingress of when Uranus moves from Aries into Taurus. And actually, we'll be having a whole teleclass about that. Neptune is moving slowly, it always moves slowly, from 14 Pisces 46 to 15 Pisces 51 by May 1st. And we have another planet that changes direction in April, and that's Pluto. On the 22nd of April, it goes retrograde. So actually, Pluto is pretty much stuck in the sky from 21 Capricorn 06 to 21 Capricorn 16 by May 1st. Not much movement. The nodes are finally starting to move past that magic 13 degrees of Leo and Aquarius. And by May 1st, it'll be down to 10 Leo and 10 Aquarius. As we move away from the eclipse season that we just went through, the nodes will start to speed up. Chiron, here's another major shift that's happening in April. And we mentioned it before. We have a whole class coming up about it, which is the movement of Chiron into Aries. And I mean, Chiron had been in Pisces for about seven, 6 years. I have the data on this. Chiron spends the longest amount of time in Pisces and Aries, and 8 years actually. And so it had been 7 or 8 years in Pisces, and it'll be a good 7 or 8 years in Aries. And that shift, that ingress, is really important, and we'll put a lot of attention on that in a whole class. And then lastly, and I think that Eric will have some things to say about this, being the Vesta specialist. Vesta will actually also reach zero Aries right at the Aries equinox point in April. So that gives you just the raw data here.
Daniel, no, the solstice point.
Sorry. Yes. I don't know why I put that down. I was looking at the movement of Chiron into Aries, but no, it's Vesta in zero Capricorn. So, yes, thank you.
A lot of activity in Aries, so it's all right.
Right, so we'll pause and take a breath here before we start to move into the events that are taking place over the month. Anything to add there, Eric, before we do that?
Well, you were talking about how Mercury will have its elongation, very wide elongation, 27 degrees from the sun, but it won't be as visible. And that's part of the kind of the myth and the legend of Mercury and its elusiveness, even if it's very far from the sun, that it takes. You know, it all depends on its cycle, the sign it's in, and this is something you talk about in a lot in the Mercury portion of the new online course that we're going to do.
Yes.
So,
And actually, if there's anybody listening in the southern hemisphere, then they're going to have a good view of it. It's only the, it's just the way the inclination of the orbit is. It's bad for the northern hemisphere. I mean, even this most recent Mercury appearance in the evening sky, it only had, I mean, this past Mercury cycle only had an 18 degree maximum elongation, but it was really nicely visible. Just due to the way these orbits are during the seasons and whether you're in the northern hemisphere or southern hemisphere. I think that even though Mercury's already gone retrograde, it's still visible up there if you for you all up in the 40, 50 degree northern latitude time placements.
Yeah. And then the other thing to note is you talked about Saturn and Jupiter and how Jupiter's dominating the night sky. These planets and especially the moon can serve as markers when you're looking at the night sky to know what area of the night sky it's in, to know the constellations and the signs. And if you've been watching Jupiter and Saturn, you've been noticing they've been slowly getting closer and closer to each other. And at this time frame, of course, you know, both Jupiter's moving backwards and then Saturn is basically almost nearly stationary this whole coming month here. But they'll still be relatively close, and they're less than 2 years really, or roughly 2 years from coming together. So that's something to keep in mind as you're watching the drama in the sky, is these points of light that are really bright and that move, these wanderers, as Greeks called them, are setting up for the big dramatic coming together in 2020.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Eric, that also with the Mars conjunction with Saturn in Capricorn, it's like watching Mars and Saturn in the sky is like an interesting presaging or precursor to what will be happening in the spring of 2020, when Mars is again in Capricorn with Saturn, with Pluto, and with Jupiter, you know. So it's like this four planets there in Capricorn in 2 years. So we're getting a precursor to that by watching where Mars and Saturn are in the sky now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Kind of noticing some noise in the background, Daniel. I don't know.
Not
that's
here.
Coming. Okay. I'm gonna try muting and seeing if that clears it up. Daniel, can you hear me okay?
Very well.
Okay. Yeah, there was just some background noise, so I wanted to make sure that people are able to hear us okay. That's all I wanted to kind of share before we start going into, you wanted to talk about the last week of March here.
Yeah, just a few things here. On the 29th, we have the square between the Sun and Saturn. There are two so-called quadratures of Saturn with the Sun every year. And so March 29th is when this takes place. And, you know, individually, like on individual horoscopes or even collectively in the world, whenever the Sun and Saturn are, you know, conjunction or opposition or square, it's setting up that complex, that the pressure or the tension associated with that can happen with Saturn will intensify in the days around the quadrature. And then if you have anything on your own charts that are close to these degrees, and we're looking at nine Aries, nine Capricorn, that's what's on the front lines with something like these quadratures or 90 degree angles or squares. Then March 30th, Venus moves into Taurus. But probably the reason I wanted to talk a little bit before we get to April is because there is this really special full moon, Saturday, March 31st. The full moon is at 10:45 Libra. But one of the things that I've had really good fun researching is the relationship over the year with the star Spica. And I've discussed this before, that Spica is like the stellar stand-in for Venus. And many of the same mythic stories that have been applied to Venus have been used for Spica. And that includes when Spica goes into the underworld, and which 4,000 or 5,000 years ago happened in August, but now it happens in September, October. Due to precession, it changes that regarding the seasons when it takes place. But this particular full moon, March 31st, is the closest full moon to Spica. 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, the closest full moon to Spica was the symbol for the cross quarter called Candlemas or Imbolc, which was the highest ceremony, the best this festival, we could say, for the elevation and the radiance of the sacred feminine, not the underworld feminine, but the when she is in a radiant glory. It was St. Bridget's Day in the Celtic world. And so now, because of precession, it doesn't happen at the cross quarter anymore, but it happens with this full moon. Now, you know, by the way, the full moon is at 10:45 Libra. Spica is not 10. I mean, like this, actually, it turns out that the next full moon is also relatively close to Spica, but it's just due to the way the calendar operates, is that the full moon is not as close to Spica exactly as it could be in other years. But this would be the one that the ancients celebrated and ceremonialized around St. Bridget's Day and around Imbolc and Candlemas and the cross quarter mysteries that were so that come from the Celtic and Northern European world. And so definitely good for the sort of expansion and awareness of the sacred feminine at this point. You know, the Aries goddess in the Venus cycle, you know, I mean, this is a celebration time for the strength of the radiance of the feminine here with this full moon.
Yes.
So why don't you, Eric, I'll turn it over to you here to take it away for the next things happening in early April.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel. So just to comment on Spica, it's if you were looking to see where it was on the astrological scale, it's at about 24 Libra. And as Daniel commented, the full moon will be again near Spica, towards the end of this month on the 29th. So yes, to start off this month, this coming month, end of April, the first thing that is really highly visible and worth talking about is this powerful Saturn conjunct Mars situation that happens right at nearly 9 degrees Capricorn. And they will be essentially within 1 degree of each other, both Saturn and Mars, until April 4th. And still be in close proximity for the next week or two after that. So they'll be in the sky in the Archer constellation. In fact, they will be near the stars of Nunki, of Polis, which is at the top of the bow, and some other stars that are in that quote teapot area and bow area of the Archer. So it's a really magnificent place to look, because that's near the galactic center, near the galactic bulge, and especially if you're away from the city lights, you'll be able to really pick up the difference in radiance between Mars and Saturn. And they're actually Mars is only slightly brighter than Saturn at that point, and as Daniel mentioned before, it's going to double in its brightness and be much brighter than Saturn by the end of the month. But the official conjunction, again, is April 2nd, and the last time these two bodies were conjunct was on April 24th in 2016. And if many of you remember, Saturn and Mars dominated the night sky, the evening sky in 2016, basically within 20 degrees of each other for more than half the year. and within, I think, 10 degrees of each other for about 80 or 90 days. So they kind of danced in and out of each other, and right around the time when Mars last went into opposition with the Sun at Akranacle Rise. So this is like completing the circle that began in 2016 between these two planetary bodies that took place originally in the Scorpion constellation with Antares, the rival of Mars. And so here we have a lot of significant events have been taking place in regards to the masculine, especially in its coming up against the boundaries and limits of its expression, and having almost like it's a gut check moment for the way the patriarchy and the masculine have expressed themselves, especially in relationship to the feminine and the calling out of accountability and responsibility for the masculine in this recent cycle. But that'll continue to develop, of course, as time goes on.
Interject here is that during that time frame, and we're talking about the time frame of like the 2nd and actually all the way through April 7th, there'll be a wonderful opportunity to see these planets in the morning sky with the moon. So we have the moon with Jupiter on the 3rd, the moon with Mars on the 7th. And what you're referring to, Erica, talking about how this configuration was in the evening sky and now it's in the morning sky.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's so great about this is that there are two time periods to have the best possible experience of the galactic center region in between the Scorpion and the Archer. And one of them is this time of year in the morning. You know, and these planets are going to be right there, you know, pointing you to that area. And then the other time of year is in the fall, in the late summer, where in the evening sky you can have this tremendous way to tune in visually and experientially to the galactic center. So now we have it in the morning sky. It's really been great where I'm living, where we have a phenomenal view of the east. So getting up in the morning, I have to get up really early in the morning because most of my calls or to the U.S., and the only time to actually do those calls is starting at about 5, 6, 8, 7 a.m. So I'm up early every morning to see this configuration, and I highly recommend hanging out with the morning sky, because not only do you have Saturn and Jupiter and Mars, but you also have the galactic center region. And this, the fact that this conjunction is happening, you know, with Nunki, which is the vein of the arrow that the Archer is aiming at galactic center, I think is a particularly important set of symbols to tune into, including the fact that where the planets actually are is at the portion of the Archer where the eyes and the head are. You know, like, what am I aiming at, and why am I aiming it, and you know, what's the purpose of the Archer anyway? You know, these would be the you know, some of the inquiries we can make here.
And even the area of the sky that they're conjunct, and even by the 7th, where Mars is starting to move away, it's in that area where, you know, the arm is pulling back the string near the vein of the arrow, and, you know, creating this this tension that happens, this buildup of energy to be released at a certain juncture. So that seems fairly significant as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we move ahead to the Pluto-Sun quadrature, I wanted to go back for a moment to April 1st, because what happens on April 1st, that is a point where in the Mercury cycle, Mercury and the Sun are conjunct at 12 Aries. It's what's interesting regarding our view in shamanic astrology of the cycle of Mercury is that we have a slightly different view about when a new Mercury cycle begins. And I'm contrasting this with the way that many other schools of astrology look at this Mercury cycle. A lot of them believe the new Mercury cycle is happening at the date of the conjunction, when the Sun and Mercury are conjunct in the interior conjunction, invisible. While our own view is that the overtone changes when Mercury goes direct, which in April would be the 15th of April, when Mercury goes stationary direct and is theoretically visible in the morning sky, and that will be at 4:47 Aries. If we're talking about the larger overtone of Mercury, whether you use the conjunction or whether you use the date that Mercury goes stationary direct, it's still Aries this time. So there's not any contradiction there as far as what is the next major expression of Mercury. It's definitely going to be Aries. But April 1st is that date of the exact conjunction, which is kind of, in some ways, it's like a new moon to a certain extent.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So then we have
the Mercury.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then we have on April 7th, that just to refresh, this is near the last quarter moon that's taking place is on with the moon conjunct Saturn and then conjunct Mars, all at that point of 9 to 11 to 12 degrees Capricorn, right there with Nunki and Polis and that region of the Archer that Daniel and I have just talked about. And it's going to be really spectacular, that grouping in the early morning sky. So following that is well worthwhile to get up in the morning if, unlike here in the Portland area, if you don't have too many clouds around, you'll be able to really take that in. And then we have the very next day, April 8th, the last quarter moon at 18:24 Capricorn, which will actually be in conjunction with Pluto on that day. And I guess it depends, Daniel. Depending on where you are in the world, as far as the date is concerned, about when Mercury goes direct, because here in the Pacific time, it's still the 14th when Mercury goes direct. But I think where you are, that's the 15th.
I was using the time and the date I put in was I got directly from Maynard's calendar, and he puts in April 15th.
Okay.
But it's true. It's like whether it's late night, early morning, and depending on what time zone you're in. But let's say the 14th or 15th.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then we have the new moon on the 15th,
I want to go back to April 10th.
Okay.
I mentioned earlier that we were talking about the Sun-Saturn quadrature, March 29th, of which there's two of these every year. There's also two Sun-Pluto squares every year. And April 10th is the Sun-Pluto quadrature at 21 Aries, 21 Capricorn. It's the same kind of phenomena here that I mentioned about Saturn. Relative to what Pluto is actually about, underworld initiation, chaos, conditions beyond our control, deep inner feelings, looking at what it is in our life that we need to compost, and so on. If you got stuff like around 20, 21, 22 cardinal signs, well, then this quadrature definitely places you on the front lines of some degree of pressure and tension at that point. But it would also be something that would collectively apply to what's happening in the world. I mean, the fact that we have these alignments with the moon going over Saturn and Mars, and then we also have the Sun-Pluto square at the same time, there's a fair amount of tension of either breakthrough or resistance that could be happening during that time, and I would suggest that around that time one could look for events that we had that are not logical, you know, that are not linear, that that are the kinds of things that happen that we can give ourselves permission to deal with the unexpected, but we can't know for sure what it is, and it's likely to stretch us beyond certain limits that we've had before. I'm just pay attention to that particular time then. And the moon is illustrating at first, and then you have this exact Sun-Pluto square during this time frame of Saturn-Mars. So anyway, keep that in mind at that point. That's a major Plutonian punctuation point in the year.
Indeed. So on the 15th, we do have a new moon at 26 Aries. And that's a point of the where the moon and the sun. This is an area where the knot of the fish constellation, the star Aurisha, is, and it's going to be above that knot at the time. Of course, we won't be able to see it because the sun will be there. But it kind of, I was looking at that symbolically. And sometimes how some of the ancient cultures portrayed the sun in a certain placement between two lines or between two lines that were coming in diagonally, like a triangle forming at the knot, and then a planetary body or a star right in between that. It's sort of reminds me of the symbol of that the actual. I think it's Ra or some other symbol that the Egyptian gods had in their marker. But if you play around with that image, it's like that's kind of the in between there. It seems like a very powerful feminine symbolism as well.
There is some good research on that part of the sky that there are certain. Astronomers that were sourcing the beginning of the Chinese calendar, and there was a five planet conjunction. All the visible planets were conjoined right in that exact area at the point when the Chinese calendar began.
Oh wow. Okay. Well, so there's a lot of energy right in that zone, and that's something to take in, and that's also a marker because it's 26 degrees away from the equinox point. The fish constellation is a very large constellation, but not very visible. So even if the sun wasn't there, it is still fairly faint to see. So Daniel, we've got a lot of great happenings coming up right after the new moon, especially on the 17th. I don't know if
we already mentioned that on the 15th, the same day of the new moon, is Mercury stationary direct.
Yes.
Then the 17th and the 18th is the moon Venus conjunction. The second conjunction of the moon with Venus following Venus's coming out of the underworld. In the Venus saga and the Venus stories, in the Venus synodic cycle, is the reclaiming and the empowerment of the second chakra, that has numerous implications. I know this. Maybe some of you listening are taking Halen and Tammy's class. I'm sure they're doing a whole lot of work around this particular configuration, and this will be. In the evening sky, and it's always very beautiful and remarkable to not only to see it, but to actually work with it ceremonially, and to remember that it's the second chakra, and isn't it wonderful that that would also be happening in the sign of Taurus? You know, so
yeah,
sensual and. Even in some degree, we could say kind of an erotic combination. You know, it's evening star, Venus with the moon, retrieving the second chakra, empowerment of the second chakra, already initiated second chakra coming out of the underworld, and then celebrating what it is to be alive at that point.
And there's an interesting observation with that, is that at the time of that gate, it will be in nearly direct opposition to planet Jupiter Scorpio. And that can be definitely an amplifier, an expander of the feeling or the energy behind that particular gate.
Indeed, absolutely. Wow, and then April 17th is also on that very day. I mean, this huge amount of stuff happening right after that new moon, as you pointed out, is also the date of stationary retrograde Saturn. Again, highlighting that degree that we've mentioned several times here on this call, 9 degrees Capricorn, 909 Capricorn, Saturn stationary retrograde. So that's like a concentrated point. Saturn is really not moving. It's just hanging out around that degree for a period of time, putting our attention on it. In school, we don't look at retrogrades as being something weak. It's more like a powerful exclamation point, a focus, like a cosmic spotlight, telling us to look in that part of the sky because it's hanging out there for quite a period of time here.
Yeah, and it's also when Saturn is at its greatest distance or aphelion from the Earth. So not to say that it's that much farther away in relation to what it normally is, but it's listed, Guy Atwal listed at 10.07 AU, and for those not familiar with that term, AU is an astronomical unit. And an astronomical unit is the distance, the average distance between the Earth and the Sun, which is about 93 million miles. And so you multiply that by 10, and you come up with about 930 million miles Saturn is at that point from aphelion from the Sun. So that is also happening the same day that it stations retrograde. That is the same day that Venus is entering the second gate. And so that's one last thing that's happening on the 17th, Daniel.
Yeah.
Chiron moves into Aries.
Right. Yes. Yep. And that's, it really speaks to the power that is given in the astrological community to an ingress, after about 7 or 8 years of being in Pisces, for the next 7, 8 years, there's a time period it does retrograde for a while back, but it's now in its time frame of being in Aries. And we're rather than trying to speculate on that meaning here in this class, that's why we're putting a whole... dedicating a whole teleclass just to the Chiron story as it moves through different signs, and that will include some of the history. The current time frame of the last 6 or 7, 8 years in Pisces does correspond to the time in the 60s, 1961, 1968, that time frame when Chiron was previously in Pisces. So now we're at the next octave of Chiron in Aries, which that started previously in 1968, 69.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be something really fun to explore more deeply in that teleclass. But yeah, that whole time from the new moon, the 15th through the 18th and 19th, there's just a huge amount of stuff happening, and not least being with the Sun-Uranus conjunction.
Yeah,
which happens on the 18th at 28 Aries. I'm just noticing that over slightly more than 4 week time frame, how many significant points in the planetary cycles are happening, and not just the turning, like stationary direct, stationary retrograde, but also these exact quadrature or conjunction points, Sun conjunct Uranus. Sun square Saturn, Sun square Pluto. It hasn't been like this for a while. If you can remember the last few months, one of the things we kept talking about was with all planets in direct motion. Well, boy, does that situation change.
Yes. That's changed pretty dramatically. But yes, after that conjunction that with the sun moves into the season of Taurus on the 20th. So we enter the middle of springtime here in the northern hemisphere, and the middle of fall down in the southern hemisphere. Did I miss any dates in there after that, Daniel?
No. I think that's good.
Okay.
And then as we go, and then on the 22nd is then the other last of the items that I've been enumerating regarding the turning points and the dramatic points in planetary cycles, which is on the 22nd, is Pluto stationary retrograde.
Yeah.
21 Capricorn. And actually, it would be around this time frame. I mean, if you look at Pluto being stationary retrograde at about 21 Capricorn, and then Uranus, which is now starting to move really fast in a conjunction with the Sun, not moving that fast. It had been moving really fast, but it's anyway, Uranus conjunct the Sun at 28 Aries. We still have the flavor here of the great Pluto-Uranus square that had been so much attention had been placed on the last 3 or 4 years. We're still in the shadow of that. We're still in the range of that if you look at large planetary cycles. So like there's so many factors in play in April, including these last energies of Uranus-Pluto, which is very strongly highlighted in that time frame in the last few weeks of April with the Sun-Uranus configuration and then Pluto stationary retrograde at 21. So just keep that in mind, that these are also energetic players in the month of April, along with everything else we've been talking about. And then April 4th, Venus into Gemini, after its enjoyable passage through Taurus, let's hope. And then April 26th, as if to really solidify what I was just saying over the last couple of minutes, April 26th is Mars conjunct Pluto at 22 Capricorn. So here's Mars also coming in to remind us about the Uranus-Pluto square.
Mm-hmm.
It's already, we've had all this stuff with Saturn and Mars. But here, then Pluto is involved in the relationship with Mars here in April also. And then to kind of cap the month off, we have the full moon on April 29th, Sunday, April 29th, and that's the Scorpio full moon, which has
a
great deal of lore and stories. I mean, this is like some would say the full moon of Scorpio is Buddha's birthday full moon.
Yes.
As well as the Scorpio full moon close to Beltane, closest to the cross border. And so it's definitely like emphasizing the energies associated with the Taurus-Scorpio axis, the aliveness and passion and connection to earth and water and rites of spring and so on during that particular full moon time.
And it will definitely be expanded upon with Jupiter relatively close, just over 10 degrees away, and sitting there between the scales and the priestess. So that caps, I don't think, I didn't have anything written down for April 30th. I did want to talk about Vesta briefly.
Sure.
So Vesta, as you mentioned, starts off nearly at 0 degrees Capricorn, at almost 29:48 officially on April 1st, And it finishes, Vesta, the asteroid, finishes at 4:42 Capricorn by April 30th. Now, Vesta typically takes about 2 to 2.5 months to pass through a sign, but Vesta is slowing down now, and it's only about 2 months away from its opposition with the sun. And so when it approaches that point, it slows down and will be starting to go retrograde, which will happen in May. And by June, if you're under, and I looked this up to make sure that, because some oppositions it's not visible, but in this case, in June, and you'd have to stay up past the twilight area after evening time to be able to see a Vesta in the night sky and be outside, of course, the city lights in order to see. It's about a little beyond a 5 magnitude star. But if you know exactly where to look, of course, you'll be able to see it. So that's something we'd cover at a later call. But that's just something to note as since it's hanging around the solstice point there, which is the, you know, the seed point near the galactic center, and where the soul, the Golden Gate, where the souls go to move on to the next life, whatever that may be, beyond the Golden Gate.
Yeah, I just find it intriguing that, that in the month of April we have Chiron at the exact Aries equinox point, and then meanwhile Vesta is at the December solstice point. Yeah, so those two symbols that are quite important in the paradigm are the sensitive degrees. Before we open this up to comments and questions, I did want to point out something else. We placed a lot of attention here on what's happening in the morning sky with that configuration. We have Jupiter and Scorpio, and then there's Mars and Saturn. Well, this Jupiter transit through Scorpio, there's something I've noticed. I've been following what's been going on. It's hard to not notice this in the news, noticing what's been happening to Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. It's fascinating to look at his chart because he was born with Moon, Mars, Saturn conjunct in Scorpio. And therefore, Jupiter is hitting those three on his chart right now, the expansion of his configuration with Saturn and Moon and Mars and Scorpio. So it's kind of like the thing that's going on with him and with Facebook is, in my view, cultural expression of what we can actually see in the sky up there. So just check that out. I mean, even if you look at some of the other major charts in play right now in world events and related to what is taking place with this morning configuration with Saturn and Mars and Jupiter. Just something to note there. And let's turn it over now to whoever happens to be on the call who would like to comment and or have any questions, either collectively, generally, in the world, or in your own chart.
All right, so I'll go ahead and put it into Q&A. So you can hit star 6 to get into the Q&A and ask us a question or two. So no one
out there. We're being greeted by thundering silence so far, eh?
That we are. That we are, Daniel. So, we've got somebody here. Hello.
Hi there. It's Bo. I don't really have a specific question. I just always feel for you guys when there's this big pregnant pause. And so I just wanted to say good commentary tonight. Thank you. And it's cool to see how everything is moving and scrunching up and moving again in terms of the activity. So thank you for the presentation.
Always great to get feedback, Bo. You know, I mean, that really helps our gives us a much richer experience when we actually get some feedback. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, Bo.
I've got Venus at 9 Aries 15, and I've got Mercury at 26 Aries 44 natally. So, it's an interesting time. And I've also got my Moon is at 28 Pisces, Chiron's right there as well. And Saturn square the Venus in Aries. So yeah, it's an interesting time. And I did get to see that beautiful configuration in the sky up here. It was clear, and those three planets together was really magical.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to continue for a while. Huh? So anytime there's that clear morning, check it out. It's not just a one-day thing, fortunately.
Mm-hmm. Will do. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we've got another person calling in from Skype here. Hello?
Hi there. Hello. It's Kyrona here in Australia. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you?
Great. Thank you. Nice to hear your voices and join you. It's a great time frame for us over here. Thank you for the 5 p.m. calls. I have a question that could sound a little ignorant, but it's with relation to the viewing of the night sky, because obviously that's a big focus of Sam's. When you're referring to things in the evening, early on the horizon over there in the US, is it different over here in the Southern Hemisphere? Daniel, you'd know for sure.
Oh, no, it's the same, just that it would be a different, it's happening, how do we say this, just as like it's what it is we're talking about in the evening, like they're watching the evening sky soon after this call.
Yeah, exactly. I get that. Cool.
Yeah, so that we're seeing that same thing just at a different day,
yes.
But it's still the same.
Yes,
it's still the same evening. Boy, I'm not saying this very well. No, when we talk about the evening stars, it's the same, okay? Or the morning stars, it's the same, wherever you are on the planet. The difference is going to be that you'll have, I've noticed this even up here at 14 degrees north latitude, that Mercury has not been quite as easy to see here as those folks in North America are seeing it.
Okay.
And you're probably not seeing much of Mercury down there at all.
Yeah, I'm a little frustrated at the moment because I'm city slicking, so I don't see many stars at all, and I'm currently arranging camping equipment so we can start getting away on the weekend so I can see the sky and get my Google sort of app out and start identifying things, because I can feel them, but I'm having trouble seeing them all together at the moment.
Well, the other difference, I mean, it just I know this isn't exactly your question, but in the Southern Hemisphere down there, and I can even get a sense of this here at 14 degrees north latitude, is that the Scorpion is higher in the sky here than for those in Portland or Seattle. Down there where you are, it's dominates the top of the sky. You know, so basically the constellations will show up in either north, further north or further south, relative to the Northern Hemisphere. But it's still the same sky. It's just that it's you'll see stuff down there that we don't see in the north, and vice versa. The relative positions would be different based upon where you are on the planet. But evening and the whole evening and morning thing is the same.
That's fantastic. I did want to double check that, because I'm often wondering, do I need to edit? Like when you talk the seasons, of course, they're the opposite at this part of the world, and I've got that together.
Rona, how I'm attempting to deal with that situation, and I'm trying to change my language so that I try to not use summer and winter. When I'm talking about I'll say the Aries equinox or the December solstice. And then they're the same. It's still going to be December solstice, so we're talking about the same one, whether you put on whether you put in the word summer or winter.
Yeah, okay. I've been saying in the past summer, winter, you know, summer hyphen winter, so people can pick where they are. No, it's one or the other, because we do know we're opposites. We've got that together.
Yes.
Thank you very much for that. And I just want to add that I'm really enjoying going through your workshops, and I'm glad, Daniel, I've actually sat in a room with you. So it's really fun to watch you talking as well. It's excellent. So thank you.
Oh, thanks. All right. Great. All right. See you.
Bye.
Thanks, Kai. Okay, we have Mary Kern. Mary?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much. This is really a fun one, and April really looks exciting. The part where my ears perked up that I would like to hear a little bit more about was 29th and 30th of April with the full moon in Scorpio. It looks like Jupiter in Scorpio, and then, like you were saying, the axis of Scorpio and Taurus with Uranus entering Taurus, Venus in Taurus at the second gate, Mars with Pluto, which is again a little Scorpio. if you have both Taurus and Scorpio on your chart, my Mars, my ascendant in Scorpio, and my Taurus moon, are you expecting the shadow to come up, or are you expecting the more Taurus to appear, or some of both working together? I mean, give me your thoughts on that.
Well, Mary, the answer to that is very much contingent upon how much work you've done around those issues up to this point. Clearly, for individuals that have not dealt with the different shadow expressions of either Mystery School Taurus or Scorpio, these aspects and these configurations we've looked at in April are going to increase the strength and the pressure of complexes. It's partly why I was using the Zuckerberg thing as an example. There's somebody who has clearly kept a hell of a lot of Scorpio secrets, as well as there's elements of within that character that is now, he hit the limit, now it's like he can't get away with certain things anymore. That's my commentary on it. And exposing the whole thing, collectively also. But on an individual level, the purpose of the configurations is to create shadow, but it's actually to get the opportunity in order to take it all to the next level, to release the energies, to have it be creative and passionate and enjoyable. It's hard to answer your question precisely because it really be contingent. It's all contingent on how much work you've done on the original configurations of your chart.
So any kind of act when both ends of the axis are being activated, that is the pressure itself. Because I can see where there would be tension both ways. You made a comment about the full moon in Scorpio being like Buddha's birthday. Did I hear that right? Because I've never heard that before. What does that mean?
That's just been the traditional date in both India and China, where we've been Buddhists. They come up with a traditional Buddhist birthday date.
Okay.
And it's been considered the full moon closest to the cross quarter, the one in May. This one happens to be April 29th, but that the full moon can very well be the first 20 days of the first 20 days of May. This one just happens to be in the last couple of days of April, so it has to happen within the month of Taurus. So that's what they give the Buddha's birthday as being in May, so therefore the full moon of May was Buddha's birthday. Not the full moon of May, but the full moon when the sun was Taurus, if you follow me.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. This is a great lesson. Thanks, both of you. You bring so much. You take everything to a new level, and it's really fun to get to look at it from your perspective. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Okay. Good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye. Looks like we have Jesse on next. Hello, Jesse.
Hi. I just had a quick question about, Daniel, what you were talking about, the full moon conjunct being spiky.